This is the Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue, with Jonathan Hutton, Chad Withrow, and Paul Kuharski.
Out of the gates, ready to go, Thursday edition, Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue. A great show planned. As the tweet said this morning from the show, might as well have another great show. Two Hall of Fame general managers on the show today, Bill Polian of the Colts, Bills, and Panthers. He will join us at 11:15 for an extended visit. Then Preds general manager David Poyle at 12:15. And kicking off our visits every Thursday, Coach Mac Dave McGinnis joins us in 15 minutes. Alongside Paul Kuharski in Brentwood, I'm Jonathan Hutton in Murfreesboro. David Reed is the chairman of the board in Nashville. No hat today, but the bandana is there. And my guess is the red, white, and blue also is a face covering when he needs it. True or false, Reed?
That is true.
And the Midday 180 shirt always gets it done. Paul, good morning.
Good morning. How are we doing, everybody? I'm happy to be here. And as regarding my primary complaint yesterday, where the unemployment agency told me that a decision had been made and my request had been accepted or denied, it seemed the way to figure that out was to check the bank account. There's no money. There's no money in there.
Okay. So, well, the daily update. It's like your weather report.
Today's today's project after the show is to go get back into that. It could be a several-hour wormhole, as David Reed knows, and I look forward to swimming through that bad boy. Could be a lot worse. I know people are a lot worse. I hope other people who are
reading
more need of that money are having an easier time getting it.
I think the Tennessean has done, and I gave them credit for the tornado relief efforts and their coverage where they send out an email blast and it tells you everything you need to know. They've done a great job with this as well, where they give you a daily report on how many claims are still left to go through. And right now, even before yesterday or the weekend, I think it was before the weekend, 50,000 were still out there that needed to be decided on. So you're probably in that list, Paul.
I just wish it was more clear, like that you could just sit and wait, or if a verdict that, well, mine says a verdict has come down. I don't know how to figure out where the verdict is. It's like a game of Clue.
You know, the unemployment agencies are always busy, which is sad to say, but it's true. Imagine now the influx of everything across the U.S., right? Nuts.
Very sad story.
My question is for Paul. My question is, were you busy with unemployment yesterday when this happened?
Paul Kuharski?
Oh, this is bad.
What? I haven't heard this.
Yeah, I had a Zoom incident.
Yep, we'll keep listening.
Paul, you there?
I wasn't there.
No, he's still not there. Paul, are you there?
Chris Harris?
No, Paul wasn't there.
I will
Paul
say.
Paul's not there.
Well, so, what happened is I was double muted. So I was really protecting people. I was muted on Zoom. I was muted on both Zoom.
Oh, my God.
I was muted on both Zoom and I was muted on my microphone.
Double protecting
people. Yeah, I was double protecting people. It's like two forms of birth control.
Now, let me just pause. I'm going to go segment by piece by piece here. You'll protect the local media from your typing, but not this show?
Well, my failures on this show led me to really going forward, be more protective. But I will say, Reed, if you have that call handy, like if you go earlier in that call to John Glennon, who wasn't double protected, what did that take? Like, let's put the timer on me there, and let's put the timer on John Glennon, who took a while to get his microphone acted. I would say that was, what, 12 to 14 seconds for me? I would say his was 10 seconds, and he's not getting blasted because I was longer.
Well, there was, so yours
and
was.
And you're you.
Yeah, yours was, yours was 17 seconds in total from the time that he called on you till he moved on to Chris Harris. Glennon's was like 8 seconds of him trying to get himself up. Then he was up, and then there was like another 4 or 5 seconds of silence before he started talking. What is it with former Tennessean report, the power twins?
17 seconds for me. I think, I should get 3 seconds more of blasting. But I get all the attention because I'm, as Hutton said, because I'm me.
Well, and Glennon also, did come on the airwaves speech. Ripping the person that was listening to our show in the background on mute or whatever it was during the Tannehill presser. Like, that's why you're getting the feedback you are. I had not heard that.
And I'll take my share of the blame, but I'll also say,
I mean,
and we'll wind up
naming. But I'll also deflect.
Well, no, I just want to advance the conversation. So Buck Rising puts out. Buck Rising puts out at PaulKuharskiNFL.com. I remember my first Zoom, which is exactly what I would say, right?
Yeah.
Then very quickly, a female reporter that Mike Vrabel gives a lot of attention to likes that.
Teresa Walker.
She asked.
I mean, why not name Simmons, her?
She asked Jeffrey Simmons a series of questions during this press conference about getting back into the building to do his rehab. When it's been a story for 6 weeks that Jeffrey Simmons is the only guy in the building that we know about doing his damn rehab. So that, I'm sorry, is worse than me having a physical malfunction getting in the thing, is not knowing that Jeffrey Simmons is in the building doing his damn rehab. Everybody in the city knows that Jeffrey Simmons is doing his rehab in the building.
Paul, this is why so many people hate you and why I love you. It's because you have the ability to take a 13-second pause where you were not ready to go on the conference call with a double mute and then deflect that to Teresa Walker, who is beloved by the local media contingent on that conference call.
Well, beloved all you want. But no, pay attention to the conference calls. You get called on for the first question, but you might want to pay attention to all the other questions, which over the last 6 weeks have divulged that Jeffrey Simmons is in the building.
Oh.
And not ask him, are you excited about the prospect of getting back in the building to do your rehab?
So did you read, first off, was this aired live on The Zone yesterday through 3HL?
Oh, yeah.
How did I not hear about this? On as much as we talk about the media handling themselves well on a Zoom call for Titans players, how did we not get more of this on social media?
I'm sure
someone heard this and thought, oh, Paul's going to hear about this tomorrow, and I'm going to be the first to tell him.
So, I'll have to admit,
it's better when it's quiet. You could spring it on me.
I was a little underhanded because we took the AJ feed live, so Paul's went out live. Okay. We later went back and aired the Jeffrey Simmons portion, to which I edited out the long pause from John Glennon.
Oh, well, there you, Reed's playing favorites now. That's very unfortunate for Paul.
That was bad on me. And on my side of it, I'm not understanding why they're not hearing me. Like, I'm asking my question.
Yeah, so what was the question?
During all that, I'm asking my question.
What were you asking during the point where you were not asking him anything? Because
I'm asking Jeffrey Simmons if it's eerie. Was that A.J. Brown or Jeffrey Simmons?
That was A.J. Brown.
Yeah, so I'm asking A.J. Brown because he had talked a little bit about doing some unconventional training, weight vests on hills and stuff. If there are times in an off season like this where you could go without catching balls, and get back to it. And he said, oh, no, I'm catching 1,000 balls a day. You know, he wakes up and catches tennis balls from a machine. He's with Logan a couple times a week. You know, it's not the same as being with Tannehill, but it's the next best thing to catch from the second quarterback. And, so he gave a pretty good answer about that. But obviously I had to wait two or three more people as I'm texting Robbie furiously saying, I'm here now. But I took myself off pause and I'm answering the question. I don't realize that they're not hearing me because I had taken myself off pause on Zoom, not realizing that my microphone was on mute. So it's bad form by me. I mean, I'd rip somebody for doing it. I deserve to be ripped. But I do know that Jeffrey Simmons has been in the building for at least 6 weeks rehab.
I hope the next time this happens that you get a response from Robbie, new phone, who dis?
That would be his dream come true to be able to respond like that, I'm sure. Coach Mac will join us on the other side. And we like to put him in coaching situations. During his visits with us, coming up, during the virtual time that Paul's referring to with all of this, how would he start to hold these meetings as a linebackers coach? What are the avenues he would go down with players, PowerPoint presentations, tape instruction, the balance with not trying to overload, information overload right now, this time of year? And then we will also prepare for the first two opponents on the Titans schedule as a coach would be doing right now, specifically Denver and Jacksonville, who both have new play callers on offense. Coach Mack next. Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue on 104.5 The Zone. Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue. They are in the process of reopening their East Nashville location. They will be back open on June 1st, Monday, June 1st. If you're interested in working with Edley's Barbecue, they're hiring. You can join the Edley's Barbecue team with Will and Catherine Newman, who are great people. I would highly recommend them as people you would want to work for. Edley'sBBQ.com/jobs is the website for more information if you're interested. If you're not interested in a job, you know someone who is, help us spread the word. They can also swing by the Sylvan Park location this week and apply in person. Coach Mack with us here on the show. He's presented by Farm Bureau Health Plans. Healthcare coverage from Farm Bureau Health Plans, it's like an extra set of pads when you need them the most. They've been protecting Tennesseans since 1947, and they're online at fbhp.com. Mac, good morning.
Morning, Hutt. Morning, guys. How are we?
Doing well. Paul is good. Typing away again for day number two as Reed sprints to the camera. Mac,
one of our I was on mute.
No, you were not. One of our if you're on mute, how'd I hear it? You called me and said, I love the Javon Curse Hour. How awesome was that?
No, that was really good. I really liked that, you know, for a lot of reasons. First of all, I mean, I don't think Titans fans, I don't think any of us can ever get enough of Javon Curse. You know, not only because of what he was as a player, but Javon Curse was also a personality. And he brought that personality not only on the field and with the production, but also off the field. I mean, you know, this guy was, you know, we were over in London with him. You just see how big of a draw that he is everywhere that he is. Anytime you've ever done an event, you know, since I've come back here and started, you know, doing the radio and doing the broadcast, I've done events with Javon, and the way that people react to him, even to this day, and he is great with everybody in a crowd. And that to me, you know, when you have players like that, that not only perform on the field and then have transcendent ability like he did. I mean, he was a special player. He was a special player athletically, and he came here, I think, at a special time. I love the fact that you guys had Jim Washburn on also, because the pairing of those two was just about as perfect as you could ever have wanted to be, because, you know, that was Jim Washburn's first year in the league also, and those guys basically really grew together. I mean, they grew together in this league, and so I thought that was a really great segment that you had, having Javon and letting him tell some stories and you guys leading him into some stories that he probably didn't even know that you remembered. And then letting Wash come in and top it off and put his flavor on it. I thought it was great. I was at Javon Curse's workout in Florida. You know, I was at that school workout. Joe Green and I went down there for that school workout. We drafted a player off of his team in the second round, Johnny Rutledge, who's a very good friend of Javon's that he and I have talked about several times. Anyway, we drafted him off of there knowing that we didn't have a chance to get Curse. We didn't expect Curse to fall as far as he did. But the physical display, the athletic display that he put on at that school workout at Florida is still one of the better things I've ever seen in person as far as a school workout. It was amazing.
And in typical Curse fashion, he was working out during the interview with us.
That was solid. You could hear the weights clanging in the background. But you know what? It didn't distract at all from the interview. I mean, I'm a big Curse fan for a lot of reasons. As a player, first of all, but just as a person, too. Because, you know, he came back. you know, once he was in Philly, and I agree with Warsh wholeheartedly. I mean, they did not use him correctly at all at Philly. I mean, that was really a crime against as far as understanding what you had paid money to bring in and then not letting that player utilize what he had done to make him a premier player in this league. But then he came back, from Philly, you know, with us here for a little while. I'm a big Javon Kurz fan. I thought that was a fabulous segment that you guys had with those two.
Mac, let's go rapid fire here and get to some bigger topics of the offseason. And then we'll get to Kirby Allen Kirby at 10:45.
Yes. Thank you.
Let's start with just the virtual meetings that are happening. How would you, just as a linebackers coach, how would you start to hold those meetings? And what are the avenues you would go down? PowerPoint, tape instruction? What would your setup be? How would you balance it?
Yeah, Hutt, I've thought about this a lot because I've been on the phone a lot with coaches around the league because I myself, you know, having coached all the years that I did in the National Football League and, you know, seeing things evolve. I mean, when I first came into the league, you know, we were still on 16-millimeter reel-to-reel film. And then we went to beta, you know, so you had to change and you had to grow with the technology as it did throughout, you know, all the 30-plus years that I was coaching. Well, these coaches now are in a different era. And clearly when they found out that they were not going to be able to have their players in, they all had to have a plan. And so I try to put myself in that space as far as to what I would do, because I know what I used to do as far as starting to teach when people would come back, you know, during this time of the year. I've talked to a lot of assistant coaches around the league as far as to what they're doing. And the first thing, Hutt, that you really would have had to do, that you'd have to have a plan. And your plan would have to be one that would have to be very fluid because you really don't know. I wouldn't know how this would begin and how this would start and how it would play out, initially. And I don't think – and none of the other coaches I've talked to have known either. So they said it was a little bit of trial and error at the first part. But I know this, going into an off season, I always had with my returning players, I always had individual cut-ups made from last year of things that they had done, technique film that, you know, I thought that they needed to work on, good and bad plays as far as the things that we could improve upon. I would always send that home with players, you know, after the final meetings with them, you know, before their exit interviews, and say, here's what I think we need to work on. And then would be in constant contact with them, you know, throughout, just periodically, you know, seeing if they'd watched that, what their thoughts on it, so that when they came back, we could really have a good base to start with. Well, you know, if coaches have done that, well, now then they're going to have to virtually be able to reconnect on this, you know, with those types of things. And the other thing that would have happened, you always in your room, you have different people that are in different areas of their learning as far as their career. Like say Paul had been with me for 3 or 4 years. Well, he would have understood and would have had a pretty good idea himself of what he needed to work on. And it would not have been as hard to jumpstart him towards an offseason, you know, program as far as digging back into how we wanted to improve the next year. As far as is with you, say, Hutt, you'd only been there a year, and this was your second year, which is a big jump for players to take. And so you're teaching the same things as far as scheme-wise, but you're doing it from a different point of view. So I would have those tapes made, and then, you know, once I had gotten familiar with the Zoom, and I'm saying this because I've talked to coaches what they had to do. Then they had to learn, you know, how, if some of them have already taught by PowerPoint, how am I going to incorporate this into the Zoom? If some of them teach on a whiteboard, which some of them do a lot, how am I going to incorporate this into the Zoom? And then what you have to do, guys, you guys know, and I'm sure just with the three of you there, I could ask all three of you, and you guys learn differently. Some people are very visual learners. Some people are very much audio learners, and then they're able to study on their own and bring it back. And then some people, especially in this business, players, they are very on the field, do it learners. They have to go through and physically process what you are putting into their minds, and then they have to experience it to be able to visualize it and do it. And so it's very interesting with this, because now you cannot have your hands on them. You don't, they don't have their boots on the ground, so to speak. You don't have the walkthroughs that you were able to do now to be able to reinforce some of the things they're learning. So it's a pretty interesting process to me, and only because, you know, I was a, you know, I was a coach for 31 years with players in my room. And then even as a head coach, you want to see how your assistants are breaking it down to them, because at the end of the day, it doesn't matter how much I know as a coach. It's what you know and what I can get to you that can help you be a better player. But it's really put another element into it that has really fascinated me, because I know how important this time of year is and how all the different levels have to come together. And it's going to be even more vital now, guys, because when they come together now, they're going to have missed a lot of on-the-field time.
I would imagine you don't want the younger players watching film of their opponents yet, because they're not in-house with you.
No, no. You really don't, because there's not – and we'll get into this a little bit. And there's not a lot that you would want them. You're trying to get them. You are trying to get them to focus on the big picture first, because that's extremely important. You've got to get the schemes to them. They've got to understand not only their part of it, but, it's the whole part whole teaching method, you know, as to where you've got to show them really how everybody's got to fit together. Then you narrow it down to their part into it, and then you expand it back out into the whole part of it. So hopefully they can put those two pieces together. That's extremely, extremely important. And that's why the coaches that I've talked to, they're also having separate time with their rookies. You have to have the rookies, because you're talking to them at an entirely different level, you know, than you are to your vets. And it's also important too, because when you're teaching to a whole room, or to right now, like to a whole screen full of people, you've got to have everybody's attention. And to have everybody's attention, you have to be giving information that's relevant to everybody. And so to your point, Hutt, as a rookie, if you're a rookie in my room, I'm going to have you separate for a while at some point, because there are going to be things that you are not going to absorb at all. And you guys know as well as I do, if you've got them on a big screen, you got some guys that are sitting there nodding their heads like, I got this, and they don't.
Is there a worry that guys take some stuff from these meetings, go out to wherever they're working out, do drills incorrectly, and reinforce some wrong stuff? We'll ask Dave McGinnis about that next.
Midday 180 queued up by Edley's Barbecue on 104.5 The Zone. Midday 180 queued up by Edley's Barbecue. Kirby Allen Kirby will join this hour at 10:45. Some Vanderbilt news. Candace Lee, no longer the interim athletic director. The interim tag removed. She is now official, the new AD at Vanderbilt. That was expected. Coach Mack with us, presented by Farm Bureau Health Plans, protecting Tennesseans since 1947. Paul?
No big change coming at Vanderbilt out of that. Dave, I'm wondering if you're teaching these Zoom classes and stuff, I would imagine there are at least occasions where there's going to be stuff that guys are going to take out to their workouts and try or work on. Is there any fear with a younger guy that he takes something out and does it wrong and forms a habit that's wrong?
You know what, Paul? Most of the people that I've talked to so far, now this is so far with Zoom meetings, there are some that have done some things as far as physical, like drills, but most of them is scheme, you know, scheme things that you've talked about. But to your point, Paul, and it's a good point. That's why when I was coaching, I would always film throughout the year my position drills, and I would have my position drills filmed for two reasons. First of all, I would want the drills to coach off of, you know, in my meeting room, saying, look, here's the drill that we did. Here's how it pertained to this part of the practice. Let's look at it and see. And I would have it intercut from the drill tape you know, to the point in practice as to where, you know, you incorporate it. Say, you know, just say as a defensive back, say if you're working on a man turn and you're working on press man and you're working on that technique as far as same foot, you know, same hand, as far as a two-step drop, you're working on a T-step, whatever you're working on in your drills. And then when you go into the 7-on-7 or then you go into the team and you can see if they're incorporating it, then you can intercut that tape to say, look, here's what you did when you were concentrating on it in the drill. Why didn't you transfer that concentration point to the actual doing it? So I would, my point is, I would tape all of my drills, and I would tape them not only for position specific, but then during the season, when you do scheme specific drills, I would do those too. And I would cut those up and send those home with the guys. And so, you know, if coaches have done that, well, then if that's the part that they're trying to, you know, put in after they put in their schemes in this, then they could interface that and say, okay, look, here's some of the drills that we do here. Let's take a look at it. You know, now go out and try this on your own. Now, to me, you wouldn't know unless somebody was filming them and they could send that tape back to you, you know, what they were doing at the time. But to your point, and it's to me, it would be relevant right now because you can't get your hands on them. If you were prepared at the time to have your specific drill tapes already, where whenever you wanted to insert it into your virtual teaching, that they at least would have something visually to look at that they could go back and refer to when they did, as you said, go out on their own and try some of these things, it would be beneficial. And so that's why I say this is a very challenging time for coaches right now. And so it's interesting to me to see how they are approaching it. And it's made me think, you know, the last couple of weeks, just about how I would have approached it. But I would have had those tapes built because I always did it. I filmed all of my drills. And so even when the guys were in there that they could see and they had a point of reference, even when we were to go out to practice for the first time so that it'd be smooth going to practice and you wouldn't waste any time reteaching it on the field.
Mac, rapid fire time here as we look ahead. I know the best thing, the best work that can be done right now, the teams who are organized and prepared the most will find strong starts on the season, and that's preparation for your opponent. Week one against Denver, new quarterback, new offensive coordinator for a team the Titans faced in week six last year. Pat Shurmur is the new OC. He ran offenses in Philly and Cleveland. He was, the Giants most recently. And because of the familiarity with Denver, but also the new coordinator, you would be studying two different fronts, right?
No, absolutely I would. And not only Pat Shurmur's not, you don't only really have a new coordinator, you've got a new quarterback coach. You know, Mike Shula's a new quarterback coach there also. And so it's not as simple when you're breaking it down saying, well, let's just go take their last four or five games from last year and break it down and stick it in the computer offensively. I'm talking about as a defensive coach, because now what you have to do, you have to know they clearly, Vic Fangio made a change because he clearly didn't like what was going on there, you know, offensively. So you fire your coordinator and you fire your quarterback coach. So you're going to have a different look. And taking it a little bit deeper, you not only would go back and look at, you know, at what he's done, where he's been. I'm talking about Shurmur. You'd study some of, you know, the quarterbacks that Mike Shula has coached also. I mean, that's some of the things that you do. The thing that is interesting to me is this head coach made that change, but he kept his offensive line coach, you know, Mike Munchak there. So what you know when you're defensively breaking this tape down in the offseason, the run game's going to stay the same. Because, you know, and you know, I've been with Munch. I was with Munch for 8 years. You know, his run game is going to basically be the same. And some of his pass protection schemes within the new things that Shurmur's going to bring in, some of those things are going to be the same too. So you're going to have to learn, you're going to have to interface those two. And that's where it's very, very important when you're breaking things down and where experience comes in, that you're able to go find things that are going to be pertinent to what you think you may are going to see, rather than just saying, because the easy, the, not easy, the really not smart thing to do would just be go back and take their last five games, put it in and say, here's what they are, because that's not who they're going to be offensively now because of that change. But there's still going to be some things because they've kept an experienced offensive line coach. And so both of those things are going to have to interface. You know, you have to, there's some thought that goes into this when you start breaking down early opponents, especially with some changes, even though the head coach didn't change. You've got some changes on that side of the ball.
Explain the difference between Jacksonville's offense last year and the Redskins' offense last year, because Jay Gruden is now the OC in Jacksonville.
Well, it's the same. It's kind of the same thing we've just talked about, you know, with Denver. I mean, you know, they got Jay Gruden, plus they changed their quarterback coach too. I mean, McAdoo's going to be the quarterback coach, you know, with Minshew there now. So that's going to be different. And so what you're going to look at, you know, with Jay Gruden, now what you are looking at with Jay Gruden, you know, first of all, you know, he likes to be a lot of 12 personnel. He likes to grind it out. I mean, he's a little bit of a blend of what you see, a little bit of what the Shanahan type thing is, but he's got some of his brother's West Coast stuff in there also. So that's going to be different too, and you're going to have to go back and look at what he has done, because that's going to be extremely important. And here's the other thing too. You've got, in both of these instances that we're talking about, guys, they have some similarities. You've got two basically young quarterbacks. That's number one. And so you're thinking, with this truncated offseason that we're going to have, this truncated preseason probably that we're going to have, and we're going to change things, how much are both of these guys? We're talking about Shermer at Denver. You talk about Gruden at Jacksonville. How much are they going to try to put into their new quarterback early in the season? They may develop as they go along, but how much early are they going to try to put into him, not only with a new coordinator, but with a new quarterback coach also? And the other thing that's very similar, when I started doing these two, because I've started doing these two already, this is what I'm doing right now, you know, going through, they both have kept their offensive line coaches that are veteran offensive line coaches. George Warhop is the offensive line coach at Jacksonville. He worked for me at Arizona. George is a very good offensive line coach. I've known him a long time. But he's got ways that he does things in the run game and in his pass protection stuff too. And so the similarities of them, when I started looking at them, and I'm about 10 days deep into this stuff with these two teams, because that's our first two opponents, just looking at it, there's some similarities as far as a defensive coach starting to look at what they're going to have to face. And then you have to use a little bit of your experience going, what parts do I think that they will have? And then you have to also think, you got to put yourself in their seat. How much am I going to make these new young quarterbacks, you know, digest early on? And then how much more, because we're playing them early. So we've got to decide that, because later on you'll have more visual film evidence as the 2020 season evolves.
Coach Mack, presented by Farm Bureau Health Plans. With Mack, we talk ball and we talk Kirby Allen Kirby, who joins us for the truth according to Kirby from time to time, wherever we're on remote. But since we're social distancing, we're broadcasting from home now. Our friend, our fourth host, our radio engineer. He joins us on Thursdays with Mac to retell the past to entertain the present.
Oh.
And that's because he's lived such an extraordinary life. Here is how I will set up the story he is about to tell. He briefly hinted at this a couple of weeks ago, where he said he had accidentally had a wound. He sliced his wrist and blood shot out and hit his uncle like 7 feet across the room from him. Turns out he was actually outside, and Kirby claims, and this is exactly how he told me this, Paul, I jumped off a prehistoric rock and cut my wrist.
Trilobite.
The details beyond that are even better than that. Kirby's next. Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue, 104.5 The Zone. Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue. Coach Mack with us, always presented by Farm Bureau Health Plans, protecting Tennesseans since 1947. Kirby Allen Kirby joins the show via Skype, an empty man hut today. Because he's cleaning it out. It's been condemned. Seriously.
I still see tape. I still see pins?
The tape is holding it up, Paul.
Yeah, it's taped together.
Kirby, just briefly tell us why the Manhunt is about to be torn down.
Well, the damage that it incurred, what seemed slight, when the tree behind it, this massive tree that was uprooted, that root ball pulled the entire foundation from underneath the back corner and moved it just a couple of inches, which I didn't think was that big of a deal. But when they tried, they can't resupport it because there's nothing supporting that corner.
Yeah.
So to try to move the building because of its age, they've decided it will come apart. So it's easier and less expensive to just take it down and replace it.
Paul, this is another building that will be torn down whenever we broadcast live from his property, because
Nashville's
his home,
history,
they also just have to go.
Nashville's history just disappearing right before our eyes.
And yet another example of Kirby Allen Kirby cannot catch a break.
While this building is down and before the new building is up, Kirby will just join us from the lean-to.
That's right.
The yurt.
Mac, are you ready for today's retelling of the past?
Let me tell you, I'm always ready for Kirby Allen Kirby. Always. Let's go.
Kirby is a man of survival. And when he was in the sixth grade, we have an example of survival. He jumped off of his lookout rock, which was a large stone left over from the ice age, as Kirby described.
Pre-ice age.
Kirby, your story, please.
Well, to the rock, to humor Paul. Middle Ohio is scattered, littered with boulders that were tumbled during the ice age, advancing down into the continent. And then when they receded, they left these, they're smooth, they're round, they're like bubbles of granite at different locations around rivers. And on this particular area, this wooded area, there was one about 4.5 feet tall that, because there sometimes were soybeans or whatever that we would use as a lookout to see, you know, when we were looking for rabbits or whatever, plinking. So we weren't supposed to be out there. They were doing some work, but we had gone out there anyway. Probably second week of school had just started. And I'm up on the rock and we're looking for one of our buddies. There's 4 or 5 of us out there. And we were going somewhere else, traveling in a different, you know. So I jump off the rock. Make up your classic little 3-point landing, both feet and a hand. Immediately felt a sting, like I had landed, you know, on a bee or a wasp or something. I'm looking, I'm not seeing anything. I look at my uncle. My uncle is standing about 4, maybe 5 feet from me. He has the most horrific, concerned look on his face. It almost thought he was mad, and blood all over the front of his t-shirt and on his neck. And I'm like, what in the heck? I'm looking at him, trying to figure out what is wrong with him. And he's staring at me when I see a stream go flying by. And I look down and my wrist is wide open, gaped open. You can see the tendons move when I move my fingers. And every heartbeat, just a shoot of blood goes across and hits my uncle. And of course, I am petrified and about to go into a panic at the moment, because my sense is at that age was that if you cut your wrist, you're going to die. You know,
we could have lost you.
So there's a guy doing some work on a bulldozer about a couple hundred yards away, and I'm wanting to go get him, and I'm throwing a fit. Now we're about a mile and a half, maybe a mile from home, and I'm concerned that I have to get to the hospital. My uncle's trying to calm me down, and I'm not calming down.
Are you lightheaded? How much blood?
Not lightheaded yet. No, I mean, it
needs a transfusion.
The blood is pouring out of you. It's shooting out of me.
My uncle grabs my wrist,
shooting out.
Tells me to calm down, slaps the, just rattles my cage once and says, calm down. Tears his shirt, ties it in a knot, puts it in there, ties that around my wrist, and puts a lot of pressure on it. I thought he was going to break my wrist, ties it up over to my neck to get it above my heart. And his brother and a friend pick me up and start heading me toward the house. And I'm panicked. And he's like, we've got this. We've got this. And he's checking my wrist and stuff. So we get about a block from home. I mean, they're making pretty doggone good time to be just carrying me like a bag of potatoes. So we get about a block away, half a block away. Mark breaks loose and takes off to my grandmother to let her know, because she doesn't have a car, doesn't drive. She calls my uncle. As we're coming up in through the yard, I can hear his car from a block and a half away, this souped up 442. You can hear him hitting gears. He comes sliding down the alley, just gently puts his mother in the front seat, opens the driver's door, tosses me into the back, rushes me to the hospital. So as it turned out, my personal doctor was on staff or on whatever call that night. He was working the hospital shift. So he, you know, no problem, takes me back. They put me on the thing. Give me a shot that hurt like heck. My grandmother's trying to distract me. So it turns out I had a list of spelling words from a spelling test that would be the next day in a pocket. And she takes that. So she's quizzing me on spelling words while the doctor, Dr. Bowerstock, is sewing up my wrist and he's commenting and narrating. And the one thing I took away from this, I was amazed. I was on a gurney. They wing this little wing out, put my arms out there. The number of pieces of prep material that they covered with before. So they leave like a little tiny 3-inch by 3 or 4-inch little window with just the wound showing. There must have been 5 pieces of stuff they put across me to create that. So anyway,
how many stitches?
21. There were 11 on the inside and 10 on the outside. I have a massive scar right on my right wrist.
How come
right
you've here. Never shown us this? Yeah, hold it up to the screen so we can see it.
It blends into the skin color now, but it runs right from here all the way down to there. It's probably
it runs vertical. They can't see. It's a vertical line.
I'm sorry you tried to hurt yourself, Kirby. I wish you had people to turn to at that time rather than trying to hurt yourself, but I'm glad they saved you.
Why was it called Lookout Rock? Will you explain that?
Well, we just called it our Lookout Rock because we would go out there and play what we called, we would be on maneuvers. We would hold on, I'm on the air.
He just took a call.
Ian Cushing. That was Ian, our IT guy.
In my show.
So we would be on maneuvers. We would take BB guns out there and play, split up and play war with each other. And so that was a rock that would give you a vantage point to watch this particular trail.
This was Kirby's knob.
Oh, it was, dude. We would go out there all the time. We all had our daisies, and there was one rule: shoot for the head. And and we would, capture each other's. The point was to capture each other's fort, much like the board game Stratego, but with BB guns.
Thank God. Okay.
Enter, one man leaves. Lookout Rock.
Tell us quickly about the prehistory of this rock.
The only thing I can tell you, it was one of those big round granite boulders left over by the receding ice age. They're all over the place up there.
Kirby, so basically, you had triage in the battlefield. Is what happened.
I would have probably gotten a Purple Heart. I should have had the Purple Heart. But,
you triaged in the battlefield. What did you actually cut your wrist on?
A piece of a soda bottle about the neck, right where the lip glass. Yeah, the one I'm talking about, like the round part of the lip.
Was it a Pepsi bottle?
I have no idea. It was just it was sunk down in that sand, and there was probably 1.5 inches of triangular shaped glass.
You know what it was?
Of the lip, and it just. It laid my hand, my wrist wide open.
It was whoever you were competing against in Cowboys and Indians. They set a booby trap for you.
Yeah, we weren't doing Cowboys and Indians at this age. We were Rat Patrol.
How did your buddies react to this bloody war scene? Any fainting?
No, nobody panicked. Joe was in charge. Danny was in awe. Mark McClintock just took instructions. The other
Danny
two,
was in awe.
The other two they stayed out there. They thought we were all going to get into trouble, so they weren't going with us back to the house.
So, Kirby, let me just say this. So, basically, what I get from this, trying to dig through the backstory, is you were playing Army, jumped off a rock into a trash pile. Okay, and then and that's where the rock was. Is that true?
No. The rock was on a corner of a wooded area before opening up into some soybean fields back behind a closed steel refinery. And there were like a lot of sand dunes back there, and we would utilize those.
And it was just full of broken glass?
Well, no, there was just a piece of arbitrary glass stuck in the doggone ground, But
it was a landfill. He's playing in a landfill.
He's playing in a landfill.
What are those pits that the Vietnamese used to dig? It was like I fell into one of those.
So you fell into a Viet Cong trap, is what you're telling us.
Yeah, one of those little sticks. Instead of a bamboo chute with stuff on it, it was a piece of broken soda bottle.
looked like a murder scene. His uncle coming out of the woods covered in blood. And
dude, it was a lot of blood, but my doctor wasn't that concerned. I mean, he sewed me right up, but it was, dude, it was like
21 stitches. That's all I need to know. Like,
there was a splatter of blood, and then and it was even on his neck, and I thought he was cut. And so it probably
Kirby, take us back to that part of the story where you said as you moved your fingers, you were shooting blood out of your wrist.
Well, it was almost like
It's like Spider-Man, but with blood instead of webs.
Very similar. I was looking at the wound, and it was gaped open, you know, pretty good. So you could see, and I was looking down to, and watching tendons move as I moved my fingers, and that's when blood goes across the way and hit my uncle in the. And it was
Kirby is a walking cadaver.
Wow.
I mean, just another
Kirby thing.
Just a long list of stitches. Yep.
Never fails to disappoint, Kirby. You're outstanding.
Had never heard that story. Never noticed the scar on Kirby's wrist. We do notice the empty shelves. When is the shed leaving? When is it going away?
I've got to finish packing everything in here, and the majority of the stuff behind me, I've got most of this stuff is just extra crap that's going away.
Well, if we can't broadcast live from there, we need a live Skype that we can
record. I'd say the demo will probably be still 2 weeks away from that. Because
chance they'd let you burn it, like symbolically?
No.
Come on.
Now, I'm sure there's city ordinances against that. No,
you don't have enough fires.
A piece of ember from that goes into the construction site. The construction site goes up. No, we don't need that.
Wall it off.
Kirby is one of our great friends of the show. Kirby, thank you. Mac, thank you as well.
Did you?
Thanks, guys. Thank you, Kirby.
Thank you, Coach.
See you, man.
Vanderbilt has named a permanent AD. Candace Story Lee, the interim tag removed. Details next. Midday 180 queued up by Edley's Barbecue. And by the way, I'll say this. Are they changing anything at Vanderbilt athletically? Paul and I will discuss. 104.5 The Zone.